Isn't it beautiful out there?
Up to the nature center, old school playground.
So we're good to go? All right. All right, so. Okay.
Automatic shutdown activated.
Oh, no.
When I push the upper button, I feel like this is a trap.
We have a Mission Impossible event going on here.
Yeah, we did a lot of refurbishing.
We're good to go again?
Sure.
Until the spread? All right, very good. All right. All right, so we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and do we do attendance then, or do we do that after some?
You can start with a roll call. The previous chair would do the roll call. If you want me to do the roll call, I can also do that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, hold on, I have to find everyone.
No. Well, then here's John, so he hasn't missed anything yet. I mean, they're not. Oh, no, we got it right here.
From that committee? Just looking it up.
Oh, for the legislature. Oh, no, okay. All right, so we'll call the order of the legislative committee for May 16th.
Okay, so Supervisor Thomas?
Correct.
Supervisor Poole?
Here.
Supervisor Wesky?
Correct, yes.
Supervisor Stock?
Here.
Supervisor Berger?
Present.
Supervisor Gaskin?
Here.
And Supervisor Uos?
Here.
All right, and we have any citizens' comments? No citizens' comments? Okay. I don't think there's, I don't have like any specific reports because this is number one, right, for me anyway. I don't know if there was something that Andy had from the previous one that we need to go over.
Nope, everything was adjourned since then.
Okay. I looked at the previous minutes and it didn't look like there was anything that would carry forward, just wanted to make sure. So we probably don't have any reports from committee members, so we'll pass on that. Communications, I didn't receive anything from anybody, so I don't know if there's anything else in that regard. Checking through here. You guys all got a copy of the minutes that were emailed to you. Would someone like to make a motion to approve those minutes?
I move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Okay, introductions. So since three of us are new, John is half new, and the other three have, how long have you been on the board?
4 years.
4 years, and this year going into?
6 years already.
6 years and?
Four.
Four. Okay. So why don't we start, we'll start with Zach and we'll work our way around this way. Just want everyone to get to know each other, because for some of us, this might be the first committee meeting that you've had. You've had, no, it's the first one for me, so.
My name is Zach Stock. This is my first time, first term. Pretty excited to see what we'll be able to do on the different committees. I'm on Legislative, Human Services, and the Public Works. My district surrounds Forest Park neighborhood. I basically have grown up in that area. Started my lawn care company there when I was 14, and been doing it ever since, so for the last 15 years. So I'm excited to see what we can do to represent my neighborhood, and excited to learn. I got a lot of learning to do, and can't wait to see what's next. So,
go ahead, Amanda.
Most of you know me, so I won't be long. Amanda Medweski. My background's mostly in corporate finance and economics, and I'm excited to be here.
Thank you.
Andy Berg, County Board, District 10. This is my fourth term on the committee. Work for the Department of Corrections, run a nonprofit garden, the Garden of Eden.
Okay, fair enough. I'm Brian Thomas. I've moved to Kenosha in 95. been self-employed for the last 34 years, own a couple small businesses. Four kids, two stepkids, three grandkids, on a personal note. District 5, which is more of the north side, pretty compact area, just residential there. Looking forward to learning more about what this committee can do on some different levels and how we might be able to influence some other things on our legislators. Because I think there's some things that we can do that affect us here locally that would affect the whole state that we should probably address. So that's for me.
Okay, Monica Uhas, District 17, Pleasant Prairie. Been on the board for 4 years. This is my first term serving on legislative. Previous to that, I served on public works, judiciary and law, and joint services and finance.
Okay.
And I am a first-time grandmother.
Congratulations!
2 months old, so
yeah,
that's
how is mom and baby doing?
Doing really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good deal. And locally?
Yes.
Well, that's a bonus.
It is.
Yeah.
So there'll be pictures every now and then. Okay. I'll be like.
Very cool.
I'm Daniel Gashke, District 7 since 2018, and we're in District 7 right now. So my district starts at Sheridan and goes out to 30th Avenue, 63rd Roosevelt, up to 52nd. So basically that rectangle. So really the heart of Old Kenosha, center city. My wife and I are local small business owners. We have a 5-year-old daughter, 4-year-old son, and I served on legislative my first term, and so good to be back again.
John Poole, been on the board 6 years previously, just got reelected. Been on every committee on the county board. And my district is District 20, which is Paddock Lake in northern Salem. That's about it.
All righty. Thank you, everybody. So hopefully we'll break the ice a little bit. Some things in common, grandparents, other things. So. All right. So the next one on here is I started trying to go through, you know, within a short time of trying to figure out how I wanted to run this committee. And part of it was looking at legislation that has been passed, looking at some legislation that has been vetoed, and if it really made sense for we would have benefited whether it was passed or whether it was vetoed, and try to look at some of that stuff and how that legislation, maybe we take little looks at bits and pieces of it and see how that translates. So the first thing that I did is when I was going through one of the more recent ones that were passed was the fentanyl bills were recently passed and allowing people to go get the test strips, which before was considered paraphernalia, and they evaluated, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but they, based on how much fentanyl you have, there's different felony classes now associated with that. So part of that then has got me curious, okay, because I've heard loosely of the different overdoses and the deaths and all that associated with the fentanyl and other drugs mostly laced with fentanyl. So I reached out to the health department, and I don't know if you guys done any research or saw articles or whatever, but there were 52 overdose deaths in Kenosha County last year. 40 of them were fentanyl related. So far this year, there's been roughly, this is only through the end of April, there's been roughly 100 ambulance overdose calls. 10 people have died. And it seems like they've all been fentanyl. The data tracking that the health department gets and the medical examiner is not that. It's not as coordinated as it probably should be at this point. I'm glad the cap was on.
Me too.
So just to give you an example, so in January there were 5 deaths, in February there were 2, in March there were 3. And I think if they were murders, we would be hearing about them. And that's just in the first 3 months. So it's almost like a person a week is dying of an overdose. And how many were there? and almost 100, literally almost 100 in the first 30 months. So that's like one a day. One person is overdosing every day, and one out of 10 are dying. And I don't think it's our responsibility to report upon that. I referenced this to Gabe earlier, and he said we should probably hand it off to Human Services. But we need to, it's an epidemic. And I tell you, sooner or later, someone on this board, and maybe there already is someone, they're going to have someone that is going to die from this somewhere in their extended family. On a personal note, going back a number of years, I had a daughter that, thankfully, she straightened out her life, but this could have been her. And, you know, so I have a little, I guess, personal connection to this. But I went back to 2010, or 10 years ago, it must have been 2012. There were 6 overdose deaths, I think, in the county. Just 10 years ago. And how did it get to 52 last year, and we're basically on track for a similar thing to happen again? So that was the reason I picked this first bill that just passed, to bring it to our attention in that regard. And I've asked for some more updates as far as like demographics, as far as like who are dying of overdoses, or who the overdoses are reaching out to. One is because if there's a pattern somehow, you know, maybe that we can, whether it wouldn't be us or Human Service or somebody, but if they realize that it's more for kids that are in high school, you know, for whatever reason. I don't know if COVID's had to play a part in this, and the depression with kids are dealing with. I know that was a thing, but, you know, maybe there's something where the county sheriff and the city, because they all have officers and sheriffs in the high schools, maybe they can be more in tune to it to see if there's any similarities. I think right now there's not a lot of coordination between those two departments in that regard, just based on the little that I know. So this is a part I don't know, and I'll help a little guidance of you guys that have been on this before. So if we wanted this to go to Human Services, would we make a motion for a resolution, or how does that work to have them pay attention to this? That would be where I need some guidance from Andy or John or whoever else has been on this before, or Joe.
You have the chair of the committee sitting here. You probably just ask her to put on the agenda.
I'm sorry?
Brian. So
you have the chair of the committee right here. You could probably just ask her to put it on an upcoming agenda if you wanted to.
Okay, all right.
So Human Services, actually at our meeting 2 weeks ago, Supervisor Gentz requested from Director Jansen a report on, you know, their opioid report.
Right.
On whatever statistics they have in terms of any kind of use they're tracking, any kind of overdoses they're tracking, their Narcan distribution, you know, what they can and can't tell is going on in the community. And I'm willing to bet that Supervisor Berg has something on this.
I have that information. It's right there. So you all pass
it on
to
opioids? Fentanyl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a problem.
Yeah.
Before fentanyl, it was heroin. It's as long as I've been on the board, it's been a problem.
Yeah.
I know that our Human Services has done amazing things to try to reach out to the community, to try to get education out there, to try to get, didn't we have test strips that we were passing? I might be wrong on that, but we had some sort of kit that it could test. Are you aware of that, Joe?
No, I don't know.
Okay, I know we've talked about it
previously.
And whether or not we, as law enforcement, said like we're not gonna charge somebody for that, because at least they're trying to be somewhat safe with their drugs.
Yeah.
In a sense, I'd rather them be on heroin than be on fentanyl, because they're less likely to die.
Right.
You know.
You don't have like Narcan training for heroin, right?
So, and that was that's part of it also is, yes, they're. When opioids was the issue, when heroin was the issue, there was a big push for Narcan. There's all kinds of areas in the city that, the county that provide Narcan training, and they were providing Narcan for free to people.
Yeah.
I had Narcan. I had one of the first Narcans where it was a syringe and a vial.
Yeah.
Now it's all nasal.
Uh-huh. And that, what she gave me, it says how many strips that they, I think, handed out or are projecting to be handing out, and how many people have been trained in Narcan so far this year and things like that. So the person that's giving me all that, her email and so forth, I don't think it's Jen, it's someone underneath her. Her name is Jen as well, so.
So the Narcan distribution and training program is pretty robust, from what I understand.
Yeah.
I think probably the veteran supervisors here have a lot more knowledge about that since they've been around longer, but from what I've been able to learn, and Supervisor Stock and Supervisor Stocker and I toured the health department a couple weeks ago with Dr. Freiheit, and did a comprehensive clinic, all the services they offer through there, the offices, and they also have the lab upstairs, and their lab is also a forensic lab. So whenever substances come through law enforcement, they are able to test to see what they are through the forensic lab. So I would say that they're pretty on top of the opioid crisis countywide, and that some of what they're doing has had an impact. I'm wondering what you would like me to put on the agenda for human services.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know if we should go through CAPE to put it on the agenda. I mean, I don't know how that works, so that's why I was asking.
Me.
So I think as collectively, we just need to be aware whenever we have our meetings of what the recent data is, because I don't think it should be something that's, okay, the legislation passed, they're doing that, and then we sort of forget about it. You know, because if someone got shot every 5 days or 10 days or whatever, you know, the sequence is here, we would know about it, but we don't know about every time someone's dying of a fentanyl overdose, which in some regard in my mind is like some degree of a homicide, right? If I give someone a drug and I know they're going to die from it, or a good chance they are, you know, it just, I don't know. I just, a big concern with me, and I think it's a population that's probably more youth related than older related.
I think it's across the board.
Is it?
Yeah. Demographically,
I don't
it's
know
across the
about
board.
It. That's
so.
Yeah.
So background to that is, why was heroin a problem? Why were opioids a problem? Opioids were a problem because so many regular run-of-the-mills, accountants, doctors, lawyers, not people living in bad neighborhoods, were taking pain medications.
Uh-huh.
They were over-prescribed, and because there's been legislation to decrease the amount of pain meds you're able to take, be able to be prescribed at one time versus the time frame you're able to do it, when they take them off of those pain meds, they're opioids. So they still have that fiend for it.
Yeah.
And so they're reaching out into the community where before they wouldn't have. And so that's where we were getting a lot of overdoses from heroin. The easy thing to do, from a business standpoint for a drug dealer, it's great to cut your heroin with fentanyl, because you can put a very little amount of fentanyl into heroin, but you don't have to have as much heroin anymore. So now you can have more baggies of heroin with a little bit of fentanyl. So from a business perspective, it's great for them, right?
Yeah.
So that's why you have this spike in opioids and fentanyl.
Okay.
And they do have the test strips and everything at the health department that are distributable. There's a kit and everything, but yeah, they have made those available. If maybe perhaps related to committee, we might inquire with behavioral health and with human services as to what kind of legislation they might like to see that would affect, you know, what kind of input they have on, you know, what would help community in terms of lawmaking.
Does anyone else have any other thoughts?
Yeah, my big question, I mean, I think I know the answer, but my first thought when I'm reading through this legislation and seeing it in the news, and this kind of also pertains to Narcan, is how does this legislation, and this may, Supervisor Burgess, maybe you may be able to answer this better, but how does this legislation help solve the problem? In that, you know, how, I guess I don't have a clear understanding of how making, you know, the fentanyl test strips available, how does that solve the issue? Is it really going to slow down drug use? Could it inadvertently encourage drug use or not? I guess I'm not sure how this helps to solve the problem. I kind of get how some people that don't want the fentanyl can test to make sure that they're not taking fentanyl. But how does it, in the bigger picture, how is this legislation actually helping to solve that problem?
I don't think that anybody has that answer, because the way you solve the problem is drop pylons 30 feet into the ground on all our borders, and before every plane comes in here and every bus ship comes in here, you thoroughly
go through the entire things. You know,
But does putting, does dumping Narcan, putting Narcan out in the streets in excess in this kind of, does it not encourage people to maybe get into fentanyl or to, like, does it encourage more drug use? Or if I got Narcan in my pocket, am I gonna take something a little bit harder? Or does it for somebody that is addicted, is that helping the problem? Is my overall question about all this.
If you ask law enforcement, have they ever come across anybody that's overdosed where they've had a Narcan? How many times do they do that to the same person? You're going to hear law enforcement tell you that it's been very frequent that they've done it to the same person over and over again. So if they're addicted, I mean, they're not just going to all of a sudden have an epiphany and say, oh, I'm done. You know, it's a chemical imbalance, I guess, if you want to say. So is there a way to make it a little bit safer, you know, by giving them test strips? Does that...
I think it's like the clean needle. It's probably most similar to that. You can come in and get clean needles, so you're not, you know, transmitting other stuff along the way, except this is to test the drug to make sure it's not going to kill you before you take it, you know, if they're willing to come and get it. Yeah, go ahead, Amanda.
Zach, to answer your question, I don't think the intention of the legislation is to solve the drug use problem. It's a save lives problem. It's a save lives. It's an immediate thing.
Okay.
It's saying, you know, Narcan saves lives. Okay. It doesn't curb drug use. The intention of the legislation is, you know, fentanyl strips, if you're going to take heroin and you want to test it for fentanyl, you know, maybe it saves your life that you tested it ahead of time or whatever else it might be on. The intention of the legislation doesn't appear to be we're going to curb drug use.
And
you're right, there could be, like you said, repeat people who have been given Narcan multiple times, maybe because they know there's Narcan out there and they're going to not stop using because someone's going to continue to save their life. I mean, that could be a downside.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if these things exist and we can save lives with them, you know, we should certainly promote them. In terms of the crisis itself, I mean, we're all going to sit here and we can talk about mental health all night and why use has increased, right? You know, that's a whole different thing. And we're working, you know, we've been talking with Human Services about what level of mental health does the county get involved with. And the truth is, not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see problems rising quite a bit in the future, whether it's substance use, behavioral health related, but you know, we don't have any other kind of outreach that's really committed to just everyone else, you know.
Okay. All right. Any others before we wrap up that topic? We're good? All right. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to do is to try to get everybody as involved as you want to be, as if there were certain topics legislative wise that maybe affect our county or that have been vetoed or stuff that they considered that got tabled or whatever it might be, that you guys had ideas on. I have a couple. I'll just share those and maybe it will trigger something if you don't have any thoughts. So most of you probably know there's going to be a 5,000 acre solar panel farm in Paris. I don't think anyone here, that's their district. You probably come real close, John, but other than that, actually it butts up against my district too. I think Brian Banshaw's area. But this is the one thing, you know, part of this, why I think it's important that we sort of look at this, is that we have the opportunity, maybe not now, maybe not on this project, but maybe in other areas throughout the state, is that we say, if there's gonna be alternative energy developed in this state, then those products have to be made in the United States. Right now, 80% of the solar panels in the world are made in China. I don't think we should be dependent upon a foreign country to provide us products if that's where they are, when there's a number of solar panel companies in the United States. Some of them actually owned by Chinese companies, but some of them are owned combination of, or some are just strictly U.S. owned. But I would think that would be our I think we're in an interesting spot as far as the evolution of energy in our country. Whether you believe that alternative energy is a solution or not, it's happening. And it's going to happen in our backyard. But if we had an opportunity to assist a company in the United States of securing or saying you have to specify products are made in the USA that are going to be solar alternative that are going to be in the state of Wisconsin, then we're helping out another state. We're helping out other American citizens with jobs right there, regardless of if it's a union job or not a union job, wherever it might be, might encourage someone to actually build a plant in a state where they're going to probably be using. We'll just imagine that this solar plant will be open 100 years. These solar panels only have a life of 20 at the most. So they're going to have to be constantly replacing them, plus replacing them for other types of things, I would imagine, as well. Like they do at any other type of manufacturing plant. This is just manufacturing energy. So that's a topic of mine. And then the other part of that would be the batteries that have to go along with the solar panels, you know, because all that just doesn't go off to the grid. It goes into these huge storage batteries. With one of the businesses I own, I sell into this industry and have probably a little bit more knowledge on some of this stuff than someone who's not been exposed to it. But, and most of these batteries are being made in China. Granted, Johnson Controls and Ford and others are building some plants down south, but those are more for cars and not for high storage capacity batteries. My preference would be if we have to do alternative energy, which we're doing, I prefer to make those type of products here. So that would be one thing that I have. The other one, the election aspects are still, just get, you know, all this recent stuff, the election legislation was all vetoed recently. I don't know if all of it was good or all of it was bad, but it closed a lot of the loopholes that allowed some things to happen that shouldn't have happened in the 2020 election. And there's numerous lawsuits affiliated with that. The first hearing was in Madison today to deal with this topic. The process that they had to go to actually get to a court is quite lengthy, because it has to go through the Wisconsin Election Commission, and that took a very long time. Then that basically got ignored. And once it got ignored, then all these lawsuits could be filed in whatever district circuit courts that they were in. So it's Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Racine, and Kenosha. There's all pending lawsuits. In some of these areas, there's more than one. So I have an interest in that. And then the other thing, this is, and I started, and I'll give you a little background on why this state statute sort of stuck out with me. I started doing a little bit more research, paying attention to sort of like the curriculum that's in our schools. And you hear, you know, kids are being, you know, what sex are you? Are you a boy or a girl? Or, you know, but there's the sexual education level, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it, is not like anything that we went to school and we were exposed to. And so I started going through child enticement laws, causing a child mental harm, and all these human trafficking and all these other kinds of things. And then I just started reading through all of them. And then I got to the very end and it said, if you're a library or an educational institution, you're immune from these statutes. So I'm assuming when these statutes were written, there was no internet probably. There was probably not the, I don't know what the right word would be, the type of education that's happening on different topics that are probably better served by parents other than staff at school, whether it's a teacher or somebody else. So I just, and reading through all those and learning more about it, and then finding out that if you're an educator, you're immune to whatever it might be, and some people can call it a list of things, right? Then fall under these categories. So I started thinking, I said, what if I was to hold a summer school class and I teach exactly the same things that they're teaching in school, would I get arrested? And the more I read and the more I learned on what they're doing, the answer is probably yes. Because I would be child enticement, grooming a child, doing all these other things that they're doing at schools. I don't know if they're necessarily doing them here in Kenosha Unified, but they're doing them nationwide. And my thought is that these statutes need to be reviewed and to determine what, and some of this is based upon what's acceptable behavior in a given community, lack of a better way to put it. I don't know what the legal term was. But so just if you're curious, those would be state statutes that are 948 point something. Or you can just type in Wisconsin child enticement state statutes, and that's all within this body of 948. All my kids are out of school. I have some grandkids in school in a few years, but it's a very hot topic in the state where schools are doing things without parents' knowledge and all those type of things. So those are my three that I would like for us to discuss as we go through, you know, our next 22 months together. I don't know if anyone else has any things that come to mind that we would want to talk about, address in some type of order. And if you have them up, yep.
Well, as it relates to the county, we spent some time talking with Administrator McDowell during our Brookside tour last week about, you know, the problems caused by the staffing shortage. And over the weekend, I met a neighbor out in the county at an event who was rather upset about recent legislation. She's a nurse practitioner, recent legislation that was vetoed by Governor Evers that would have allowed her to have the ability to somewhat practice on her own without a physician overseeing her practice in a limited capacity. And given the fact that throughout the state we have a shortage of healthcare workers at almost every level, including at Brookside, you know, any kind of legislation related to regulation, licensing that would impede us from taking advantage of the resources that are available. That, you know, I mean, during COVID, a lot of states temporarily lifted their regulations saying, well, if you are a licensed nurse in Wisconsin, you can come and practice in Illinois without having to go through a bunch of rigmarole or vice versa. For our county to be able to address these employment shortages in healthcare, you know, any kind of legislation related to that, we want to be able to see that we're following and seeing how we can contribute, you know, as it relates to the county and its needs. And that goes for law enforcement as well. You know, what does it take to be a corrections officer? What does it take to be a police officer or a deputy? And are there obstacles in the way that are maybe unnecessary? And if there's any legislation related to those two items, or even the housing shortage, you know, if there's obstacles to development, what can we do as a committee and as a board to contribute to supporting legislation that would remove those obstacles?
All right. So can you find out what legislation was vetoed?
Yes, I can.
Okay. All right. That would be great. Anybody else? Thoughts, ideas, good, bad, and different, we can weed them out.
I think that one thing we can do is invite each of the legislators that are in our county, state legislators, both Assembly and Senate, and ask them to come here and talk to us about what is on the horizon, what's on the floor, what's, you know, straight from the horse's mouth in a sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's why I got their names and stuff here, so we could pick. If there was an order that we wanted to go through, if someone knew someone more personal and use that connection, so we're on the same track. Right. Okay. All right. Okay, so if there's no other ideas, we'll move on to the next one. I just, I don't know what the right word would be here. I was trying to think about earlier, because I gave, some of these agenda items are just cookie cutter items, and then I had Michelle, and thank you, Michelle, for putting this together, you know, some of the other items on here. So one of them was, and we don't need to decide this today, but I just want you guys to give this some thought based upon, hope you're getting a little bit of a feel on how I want to do things going forward, of what some objectives we should have collectively, you know, so you can email those to me and then we can review them next month. But just give it some thought and let your mind wander, whatever your life experiences have been. And based on, if you're a legislative political junkie and you follow some of this stuff, and I mean, I don't know how many pieces of legislation got passed, but I do know 126 things got vetoed in the last session. So there might have been some good things that we would have benefited from that got vetoed. I want you guys to be more active in looking at this stuff, because I think we have an opportunity to make a difference here locally, and then maybe it goes beyond that if something gets passed that we're all dealing with. And so that would be my thought on that. So just, and if any, in saying that, feel free to call me if you guys don't want to email me, and we can talk about it that way as well. So whatever works. So the next item on here piggybacks what Andy had just said, is some discussion topics, potential speakers for some future meetings. So I know they're all out of session right now, so I know a lot of things are laying low, and probably all of them are in election mode that are running for something, but I think pulling them away for a little bit, I would think that would be time for. So Dan Vanguard, he covers west of the eye. I think, I don't know how far south he goes, but I know he covers part of Kenosha County. Robert Wirch, and then 61 is quasi open, I guess. Samantha has not resigned, right? So she's still 61, but so that's sort of an open seat. Tip McGuire, who I know just this much, and then Todd, I don't know Todd at all. So does anyone have a connection where you think they would be open to coming and giving us like a review of the last legislative session? If not, I'll just reach out to somebody until someone says yes.
Yeah, well, with all respect, I think it's probably best for you as a chair of the legislative.
Well, they're all going to work their way through this, so
yeah.
I'll reach out to all of them, but if someone knows someone, they can pull a favor.
it's likely dependent on their, who's available first.
You know? Yeah, in the past, it hasn't been an issue of, hey, can you do me a favor and come in?
Yeah.
It's the responsibility to come in, and they have all been very open to coming in because they want to talk about what they're doing, especially if they're not in session right now. Guess where they are at? They're in the streets right now in the community, so they have the time to come here during the summer and the fall.
Okay. All right, so outside of... Mark?
Suggestion, why not do Samantha first, because she's going to be the first one to leave. She can at least maybe talk a little bit more open.
If you can get her on the schedule.
Okay, no, that's a good thought. Is there, would there be any other type of speakers that would make sense for us to bring in? That would be another issue that, or not another issue, but it doesn't have to necessarily be someone, a representative here. It could be, yeah, John.
In the past, we've had a representative from Wisconsin Counties Association.
Okay.
Because they have regional reps. It'll come around.
Any other ideas?
Is there anyone that Corp Counsel would recommend in terms of interpreting legislation or questioning the legality of any of our current ordinances or something, any resolutions, if they're legal or not? Recommend any guest speakers?
No, not really. I mean, typically the committee has heard from the legislative delegation, as Supervisor Poole indicated. Had usually a couple times a year someone from the Wisconsin Counties Association.
Okay, I just had a thought. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I think if we're going to go down the path of telling local municipalities what type of products they should be using in their backyards, that if we're going to take that approach with these solar panels by U.S. products only, you need to have the chairman from Paris, Village of Pleasant Prairie, have them come in and see
what their thoughts are.
Yeah, on it, because
it's a good thought.
I don't know that the state mandates what type of products you can use in manufacturing as far as for each individual person.
Right, well, no, this wouldn't be in someone's backyard. This would be for the solar panel that's going to consume 5,000 acres.
So you're talking about a solar farm,
not individuals.
But
this solar farm specifically.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, the small panels on people's houses and stuff, that would be the topic,
Because there's been a lot of ordinances written locally for residential, because that's that's really big right now.
Yeah.
And municipalities are trying to figure out how to address that aesthetically and still keep values up in different things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's where I was
going. No, I appreciate that though, because that clarifies what I meant for everybody as well. So, but it's still a good idea to get them involved,
mm-hmm.
you know, on their level as well. I think most people on that product, if it could be made in the United States effectively, we should keep it here instead of having it shipped halfway around the world. So I had another thought on the statutes, and maybe, and I don't know enough about this because it just popped in my head. I don't know if there was legislation or laws that were or weren't enforced, or maybe they weren't applied necessarily, but the way that the riots were handled, you know, I don't know if there, whatever legislation there is, like when something happens, does something automatically else get triggered? Like if there's a riot on day one in a town, does that same day, does the National Guard or other forces, do they come? I don't know enough about that. And obviously it was right there, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's where emergency management would come into play.
Yeah.
To reach out to them, to ask them what was in place when it happened and what has changed since then and what's... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, could somebody brief us on the protocols and, you know, if there's something that we need to,
yeah.
need so to change to make it
that
better.
That popped right in your head like you knew it.
Oh, I know a lot of things.
That's what I'm just saying. So can you dig up a little bit on that and then...
In terms of legislation?
Yeah, I mean, if there was legislation that they had to deal with...
I think that should come from emergency management.
So that's one of our...
Yes.
Oh, that's a...
That's under the Sheriff's Department.
Okay, the Sheriff's, mm-hmm. okay.
Yep, so you could reach out to emergency management.
Okay. All right.
I believe Captain Staples is transitioning out of that, but he does have a deputy underneath him.
Okay.
In emergency right. management. And then also, I thought about something. Yeah. Human trafficking, you brought that up. I would like to know, we had a human trafficking house in Pleasant Prairie. They came up from Florida, they bought this building, they put a lot of money into it because we know we have the visitors area out on 94.
Yeah.
We know it's a hot spot for trafficking. And somehow legislation did not get passed to help fund the Shihada house. And they closed, and they went back to Florida. So I would like to know why that happened.
Was that formerly the Genesis House?
Yes.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was some vetoed legislation?
I don't know that it was vetoed.
It just wasn't?
It was not passed.
Okay.
Was it taken up?
I believe it was.
All right.
Okay. And?
So if you know how that was referenced or what the bill number was or something or anything close to that, so I can...
Well, I think Tammy could help with that, right?
You're thinking that it was a legislative...
Yeah, I think Sam would know about it.
Directly funded it?
It had to do with funding.
For that project in particular?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, the Kenosha News did a big story on it about how they had to leave because of the lack of funding from the state and the local officials and how they did not champion for it in Madison.
Okay. All right. We'll figure it out. But no, I agree. That fits right in with everything else. So perfect. All right. All right. Anything else while we're talking about speakers or future topics? All right. Okay. This was a default one. Other matters. I don't have any other matters unless someone else has some other issues you want to bring to the meeting.
Back to legislation. I don't know about you guys, but there's a lot of buzz about what's happening with all the roads being closed and people complaining, it's the county's fault. Is there legislation that exists in regard to civic planning, public works, planning and development? I've heard several people have concerns about, emergency management. Like, if all the roads are closed going to the highway, how does an ambulance get to or from? You know, are is there legislation that governs, you know, something that, what all can happen at the same time in terms of construction? You know, is it safe? What do they have to determine? And I suppose that would go to that department.
I can tell you when a road project happens, they have to submit an emergency plan.
Okay.
So it is discussed. They have to keep one lane open. The DOT with Highway 50, they have that. I can tell you in the village of Pleasant Prairie, because I work in engineering, there's always a traffic pattern. There's always a traffic flow set up to ensure that emergency vehicles do have a way to get from A to B. No arterials are ever completely shut down. There's always a way to get to a hospital. So there are...
Is that municipal code, or is that statewide legislation, or is that
depends
county?
On the project.
Yeah, depends.
It's a county project. Yeah. It's up to the county to do it. If it's a local municipality, it's up to them to do it. If it's a state project, the state would submit.
So it sounds like it's a state ordinance or state law that says you have to have this parameter, this emergency management portion of your roads, road construction.
When I'm trying to talk back to people, I'd like to find out more information as to say, this is how the units work together, and this is the legislation. These are the statutes that say there has to be a road open, you know, one lane open. You know, I'd like to come back with a thorough response, but I don't know what that is. So
I would suggest, if I can, Chair, to reach out to the DOT and ask them if they could send a representative from the legislative department, kind of explain what you're asking, but contact the DOT and ask them if they can send somebody. You know, there's DOT employees that are around the area.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, at least going east from 94, there's only two roads currently open that are four lane. And actually, it's not even four lane on 165, but it's 142 Washington Road. That's the only four lane road from I-94 in the traffic. And I live just off of there, and the traffic has increased significantly. Especially since they closed 60 as well, you know, it's like.
Yeah, that discussion came up in Public Works, and I was at the community meeting with Clement, and they had DOT there, they had everybody there, and that did come up specifically. They had the fire department was there, and he wasn't too happy about it, but they kept referencing, yes, we have to leave emergency access open. It's going to be a bumpy dirt road, but emergency access is open. But
yeah.
I think it's more. All these moving parts. We have a state project next to a county project, and it's just creating a lot of headache. But they have been consistently referencing something where they have to keep those roads open.
You go on 52nd Street now, and it can be backed up for almost county road age.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
Be ready, because once Highway 50 is done, 52nd's on the docket to be four lanes also.
Yeah.
So I imagine they might jump on that pretty quick.
I heard that's next year.
I saw the orange bales going up on 165 yesterday, and I almost started crying. That's my road. That's your road, right? I'm like, don't do it.
They're just doing it.
So I sort of like this as we're talking, everyone making someone think of something else. You know, so that's the benefit of people that have been here before, your background. And so the engineering, is that more facilities, or is that infrastructure, like with the
infrastructure,
roads.
Storm sewer,
uh-huh.
Water, sanitary sewer, roads.
Okay, so I mean,
water
that's
towers.
Yeah, you know. So I mean, yeah, Pleasant Prairie is a whole different conversation.
Yes.
So I mean, that would be beneficial for all of us. You have a unique background with what you do for a living. You know, I mean, so we all are going to bring some different experiences. And again, like if we say some at the beginning, and you think of like the solar panel, sort of more. Just feel free just to bring up, doesn't matter where we are in the meeting part, because it's all going to be relevant somehow. So is there anything else, anyone? No one else? We'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you all very much. I just lost my phone for or never again. What would it be? For committee chair virginity. So
there you go.